This is the story of a journey by sea. It is long, tedious, dangerous. It is dependent on the changing winds. It is a story of the scouring heavens, the hungry deep, the weltering foam wreaths, and the drifting of the ship. A story of the loud roar of the wind amid the shrouds and the loud dash of the billows as they threaten all on board. But there is something that distinguishes this voyage from the thousands of others, this effort for safe anchorage and harbourage. What is it? Not the name of the captain, or the vessel, or the sailors, for all have long since gone. It is the fact that on board was a man of finer character and sterner mould than we rarely find, unshaken by the storm and confident of the outcome, the Apostle Paul. Now, for the nautical matters in this address, we are indebted to a work written about 120 years ago by a Bible student who was also a sailor on the high seas for 20 years. And he was the one man who has been able to answer the critics on all the important matters in chapter 27 of the Acts of the Apostles. Some of these we shall see for ourselves as we go on. Our place of embarkation then is Caesarea. It was then the principal city of Syria on the coast, 36 miles south of Acre. Its former name was Strato's Tower. It was looked upon by Herod as a suitable place to raise a city. The buildings were all of marble, its houses and its palaces. It rose in a short time, in 10 years. There was also a temple there dedicated to Caesar, in which were two images, one of Rome and one of Caesar himself. And the city took the name of Caesarea, less for the materials than the workmanship. Paul had been brought here 2 years before. His repeated examinations before Felix and Festus, governors of Judea, and before Agrippa, the last of the Herods, and his appeal to Caesar, which occasioned the voyage, are the introduction to our subject. Not long after, a merchantman of Adramyttium, a seaport town in Mysia in the Lesser Asia, lying over against the Isle of Lesbos, was making a homeward voyage from Egypt and happened to touch at Caesarea. It was not expected to reach Italy on this ship, but the ship was taken advantage of with the expectation of meeting at one of the ports another ship, or else of taking the overland route along one of the great Roman roads towards the imperial city. Hence, Paul is committed to the charge of Julius, a humane officer, a man who was kindly disposed to Paul, and with him were a company of soldiers and two companions of the apostle. The use of the we in verse 1 shows that Luke was with Paul, and he and Paul are the us of verse 2, and Aristarchus, who was with them, a fellow prisoner in bonds. Roman soldiers were responsible with their own lives for their prisoners. The custom was to chain them with a light, long chain by the right wrist to the left wrist of the soldier, who was altered in turn. Hence, there was really no time when the prisoners were entirely free. This we must bear in mind in our journey. So the ship sails. It is the month of August. Now we can arrive at this point in this manner. According to records of ancient history, the arrival of Festus in Judea was in midsummer, or, shall we say, the 24th of June. Then, following the dates given in the Acts of the Apostles, this is what we get. In Acts chapter 25 and verse 1, we allow 3 days for his sojourn at Caesarea after the arrival of Festus. Then 2 days for going up to Jerusalem. And for his stay at Jerusalem, 12 days, Acts 25, verse 6, Then 2 days more for his return to Caesarea, and 1 day more for the hearing of Paul, still in verse 6. And then after 13 days, Acts chapter 25, verse 13, say 10. And then many days, say 7, Acts 25, verse 14. And then another day, Acts 25, verse 23. And then an interval in preparation for the voyage and finding a ship, say 20 days, that is 58 days in all. Now 58 days from the 24th of June will bring us approximately to the 21st of August as the date of departure. And then the apostle says, the next day we touched at Sidon. Now Sidon is 67 miles from Caesarea. And this journey was obviously done in good time because of the westerly wind which was blowing at that time of the year, and they passed by Ptolemais and Tyre. Now Sidon is one of the world's ancient cities, taking its name from the son of Canaan, and appeared soon after the flood, and became a city of vast riches with ease and opulence, until under the successive waves of oppression, her once envied greatness is now only a miserable village. The ship could have called here either to land passengers or for purposes of trade. Now we remember that Paul had already visited Sidon and had undoubtedly preached the gospel there. He therefore had many friends in the city. And the vessel not sailing immediately, and the centurion from a kind heart courteously entreated Paul, who went ashore, of course, chained by the wrist to a soldier, to visit his brethren. He saw his friends, was refreshed by the contact he had with them, and enjoyed the benefit of their care. And then eventually, leaving Sidon, the ship moves into the open sea and comes in sight of Cyprus. Now, Cyprus is one of the largest islands in the Mediterranean, 100 miles from Syria, 60 miles from Cilicia, from east to west in length about 200 miles, and in breadth about 60 miles. The name is said to be taken from the cypress trees, which tree grew in great abundance on the island. Its chief goddess was Venus, until Paul planted the gospel there. Now Luke says, we sailed under Cyprus. What does that word under mean? Well, there were two ways to go by Cyprus. They could go south of it, or they could go east of it. Which way did they go? Now, if we can discover which way a ship normally went, the way it would have gone without impediment, then we can see which way this went, because it had an impediment. The winds were contrary. Now, from the map, we can see that the direct route to the coast of Asia, that is Proconsular Asia, of which Ephesus was the capital, and of which Pamphylia was not a part, see Acts 2, verse 9, to Myra in Lycia would be south of Cyprus. That is to leave it on the right hand. The direction, therefore, would be west, north, west. Now, if you want a confirmation of this, we only have to go to the 21st chapter of the Acts of the Apostles in verse 3. When a journey is being made from Patara in Asia to Phoenicia, and Luke is on that vessel. And he says, we left it, that is Cyprus, on the left hand. That is, we left it to the north. And so in the normal way, they came south of the island. So to go south of the island was the normal route. But with contrary winds, that is either west or northwesterly winds, they sailed under Cyprus, that is under the lee of Cyprus. And the word under is a nautical phrase and means to sail along that coast that is sheltered from the wind. And they endeavoured to break off the violent winds by putting the island between them and the winds, and the hills and mountains running along the east of the island. So they sailed up the east end of the island. Now this is borne out by verse 5. We sailed through the sea of Cilicia and Pamphylia, which is to the north of the island. Now the ships of the ancients could not set their sails less than 6 points of our modern compass to the wind, or more than 8 points. And the wind blowing at this time was west-northwest. And 7 points of our compass to that wind would be northeast. And so setting the sail, and with the mountains of the island between them and the wind, they made for the coast of Asia Minor. After passing north of the island, they came into contact with the land breezes from the Asian coast, and also a strong westerly current which prevails at this time. And with these advantages, without undue delay, the ship arrived at Myra, a city of Lycia. Myra was situated in a long gorge which connects the mountains with the sea, some 2 miles from the coast. The river Andraki flows from the sea to the city, and the broad channel had been formed into a port. Here Paul and his friends landed. From the magnitude of its ruins, its extensive theatre, its amazing tombs, we now know that at that time it must have been a very commanding place on the highway of nations. Here the centurion probably changed his plans, for at the crowded quay a merchant ship had arrived from Alexandria. It was laden with wheat, verse 38. Now this city in Egypt was founded by Alexander the Great and was one of the most remarkable marts in the world. It was the regal seat of the Ptolemies, and under Rome was its principal city. Here were noble buildings. Here was the Library of Philadelphus with over 1 million books. Here the Septuagint version of the scriptures came to be translated. And it is well known that at this time Egypt was one of Rome's granaries and sent large quantities of grain to the capital. From the number on board, verse 37, it was a large ship. In fact, it is known now that these vessels were among the largest in the Mediterranean that were sailing from Alexandria to Rome. But by a glance at the map, Myra seems far out of the way of a ship going from Alexandria to Rome. She seems no nearer her destination. The direct route is, of course, south of Crete. Why then is she here? Well, this vessel must have set sail about the same time as Paul's ship from Caesarea. That is, the same wind was blowing for her too, the west-northwesterly wind. This means that she could have her sails between 6 and 8 points of our modern compass to the wind, and could therefore come to Myra right across the water, and only do that. This shows how the ships of the ancients were ill-calculated to stand against the wind. Here then is a large ship. She had to stand to the north, make her way to the coast of Asia Minor, and get the advantage of the strong westerly current, of the high mountains, all of which could give shelter and support. Thus in this Alexandrian vessel the centurion and his party embarked and proceeded on their homeward way. And she sailed slowly. So slowly that between Myra and Cnidus many days were lost. Now the distance between these two places is 130 miles, that is to the entrance of the Aegean Sea. Now let us notice the difference between this journey and the one from Caesarea to Sidon. How much longer the journey took? What caused this? Well, it was one of two things. It was either calms or contrary winds. The writer settles it for us. It was contrary winds. Because, he says, we scarce came over against Cnidus. That is, we only came up to it with great difficulty. And this word, we understand, expresses the difficulty that ships have in contending with adverse winds. What winds were they? Well, let us look. Now, the direct course of the ship after Cnidus towards Rome is across the north of Crete and through the archipelago west by south. And a wind that prevented her from taking a normal course and drove her southwest under Crete must have come from the west. But from the map we learn that at Cnidus the ship lost the advantages of the westerly current, of the smoother water, and of the protection of the mountains. With these it sailed with difficulty. Without these it was impossible to continue, but turned southwest. The wind was then not merely west, but it was northwest. To make headway against it was impossible, and the only alternative was, instead of the direct course through the archipelago, and steer southward and run under the sea of the island. They therefore made for Cape Salmone, the eastern promontory of Crete. Now let's bear in mind that the wind was northwest. So they set their sails, 7 points of our modern compass, to that wind. They set them, therefore, southwest. And by doing this, they rounded Salmone and proceeded under the lee of the island. And after rounding the promontory, the ship continued for 80 miles till it came to Fair Havens. It was a tolerable roadstead, behind some isolated rocks, and though a good shelter, it was exposed on the east and on the southeast, and was therefore an unsafe refuge during the winter. Fair Havens was not a town. It was so called because this was the fair coast of Crete and is marked by the near place of Lycia. They stopped here because 6 miles away the land recedes, just as it does at Cnidus, and the covering from the northwest wind must again have ceased, and the ship would once more not be able to proceed. And so, because sailing was dangerous, and the fast of the Day of Atonement was already past, that is, we are now towards the end of September, it marked the season of the autumnal equinox, when the seas were not considered safe for navigation, verse 9, all hope of completing the voyage seemed to be abandoned, and a council was held. Now this council consisted of 4 people. Julius, the captain, the owner, and Paul. No other prisoner. Paul was on very friendly terms with Julius, and he knew he had had much experience. And we read that Paul admonished them. Yes, how true it is. He had had experience. Thrice I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day, he says, have I been in the deep. Now, all the committee agreed that the navigating system was at an end. So the matter to be determined was whether the ship was going to spend the winter where it was or continue somewhere else. 2 views were expressed. Paul said, "Let us remain where we are." The captain and owner proposed that they should remove to Phoenis. The centurion was persuaded by them, 3-1, and Paul's advice was rejected. Now Phoenis, we are told, was an harbour lying 40 miles to the west. Paul speaks 4 times on this voyage. This is the first time. The master was the one in charge, and the owner was the one anxious for the cargo. Now verse 12. Phoenice, we are told, was a haven of Crete, lying to the southwest and the northwest. Now this verse has been quite a bit of a problem. But what we have to try and remember is that the sailor's standpoint is from the sea. And for him, an arbor sheltered from those winds which he wanted to escape, looking from the water towards the land enclosing it, would be in the direction of the northwest and the southwest. Therefore, an arbor facing east with entrances northeast and southeast would meet the case. Such is Phoenice, or as we know it by another name, Rutro. It is a bay having two entrances, with an island in the front, and points to these two directions of the compass. Students also tell us that the preposition here can mean in the same direction. And that means that the harbour was not open to the points whence these winds blow, but to the point towards which they blow. This is Rutro. And then at last, verse 13, there came a sudden change of weather. The south wind blew softly. Now this was the wind they wanted. This was just right for complete success. Now there could be a good run to Phoenice. They thought their purpose was fully attained. And so, full of hope and confidence, the small boat was let down to the back. The sun was gleaming on them. The anchor was weighed. And gaily the boat sails through that delightful sea by the rocky and bold shores of ancient Crete. Look for a moment at this scene. The sailors are but half employed. The passengers are pacing the ample deck and enjoying the balmy breezes. Now look at the captain, the owner, and the centurion, looking at the clear sky, and then thinking of Paul, who had remonstrated against the voyage. Well, for 6 miles they kept close to the Isle of Crete. Then they came to Cape Metalla. Now Metalla is west by south from Fair Havens, and with the south wind continuing, they should just get round the cape. 7 points of the modern compass to the south would be west by south. Hence, if the wind continued as it was, a southern wind, they would just get round Cape Metalla. Now notice what Luke says. And this is a delightful point. Verse 13. We sailed close by Crete. There is little doubt that the man who wrote this wonderful adventure story was on the ship. He knew where they were at that precise moment of time. Close by Crete. Then, without a moment's warning, came a change. The sky was overcast. The wind began to moan fitfully. And a tempest arose from the northeast against the vessel. There is no doubt about the direction of this wind. It came down from the island. If not, they would have been stranded on the Cretan coast. But when did it happen? That's the point. Verse 14. Now the phrase, not long after, is a relative term and means less than half. And as there were 34 miles to go from Cape Metalla, the ship could not have travelled more than 60 miles in a west-north-westerly direction. that he drove her towards Korah, that is to the southwest, also indicates that it must have come from the northeast. The word Euroclydon is composed of two Greek words meaning wind and waves. It speaks of the violence of the storm. There is, however, another translation found in some manuscripts, which is Eurokion, which gives the sense in the word of the northeast wind. So without a shadow of doubt, here we have the northeast wind hitting the ship. Now at the time that she was caught by it, the ship must have been near the island of the Praximedes. Now this time, unlike previously, it was so severe that there was no time to make adjustments. And we now see here an entirely different picture to what we have seen before. We see the ship driving before the gale and eventually reaching under the lee of Korda. Verse 16. Of course, under Korda they became protected once more by the wind and had the advantage of smoother water. Three things are now done. Verse 16, the boat was hoisted on board. Now this could not be done in the teeth of the gale. It must have been filled with water. And Luke says, we had much work to come by the boat. Now at any time, we understand, to raise a boat was a work of some difficulty. It would be heavy and it would be full of water. But in order to do so now, the boat's head had to be turned to the wind and the sails set as to keep the ship rolling only slightly in that troubled sea. It was not much of a protection for 276 people. But should things come to the worst, that little boat might be the means of saving some. So we hoisted the boat on board. Then secondly, they used helps. That is, they undergirded the ship. Now, in consequence of extreme danger to which ancient ships were exposed from leaking, it was usual to take as part of ordinary gear what they called undergirders. And due to the violence of the storm, the captain and owner thought the ship's timbers might start. And so they put chains under the keel and over the gunwale and probably ropes along its side to strengthen the hull and to keep it from being battered to pieces. Now came the question. What course were they to steer? They could not scud before the wind, for that would carry them to certain destruction onto the great sandbank of Africa. North of Africa, by Tunis, there were quicksands. They were vast beds of sand that were continually moved about by the waters of the sea off the African coast. A ship might not know exactly where they were. They were driven up by the sea and had been fatal to many a fine ship and to many a noble crew. They could not turn the head of the vessel to the left, for at no great distance lay the coast of Libya. So the only alternative was to turn the vessel to the right, or in a northwesterly direction. And so they did, as what Luke says, verse 17, they strake sail. That is, they lowered the gear. Or what we might understand by this is that the top amper was lowered, and the mast rigged with only a small sail to keep her steady. for the object was not now progress, but to weather out the gale. Hence she did not scud as previously, but lay to, and was drifted or borne along by the gale. Now let us remember that it was an east-north-easterly wind that was blowing, and in the case of bad weather, so we are told, weather such as this that we are now encountering, a further 6 points of our modern compass could be added. That is 13 points of the compass in all. And 13 points of our modern compass from east-northeast makes it west by north. So you see, the ship has been brought round with her right side to the wind. A right side. And the direction of the ship is not that in which she appears to sail, but is leeward. That is, to the left side. And she was laid to in such a way as to drift slowly northwest. And so, with preparations made, the first day passed, and darkness settled down on the sea. Let us then, to conclude our first part, notice the skillful manner in which the ship was handled by the crew in the order of the events. When the ship had passed to the southeast of Corda, and this is indicated by the use of the words running under in verse 16, this, we are told, is a nautical term and expresses first that the ship had the wind behind it, and secondly, that it had the wind between itself and the island. Then the boat was hoisted on board. Then the ship was undergirded to prevent the straining of the hull and to lessen the danger of leaking. Then all the topsails were brought onto the deck. Then the ship was laid to prevent it being driven onto the quicksands north of the African coast. These undoubtedly were mariners who knew their job. And now, as we follow the path of the storm, we shall see this skillful management of the captain and the managers continue.